Caleb Parsons is 6'9 swing man. You can shoot the three.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello, and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast for Thursday, someday in late July. we are podcasting here from Hoover, Alabama at SEC Media Days. We just wrapped up day two. So we're going to hit you with a quick recap of what happened on day two, some things to look forward to on day three, and also some discussion for what was in the paper today, our list of the top 10 storylines heading into this academic school year. I'm Mike McCall, and with me today are
Mike DiFernando
and Kyle Maestri.
All right, so the big story still at SEC Media Days is what has unfortunately come to be known as Tebow Gate, which may have been Kyle's creation. I don't know.
I like to think ESPN ripped it for me.
Yeah, that's probably the case.
Yeah.
They probably listen to this. I'm sure they do.
We know Chris Lowe does.
Yeah.
So he probably passed it on to his superiors. And next thing you know, John Anderson's saying it on SportsCenter, and I get none of the royalties. So. Yeah.
Chris Lowe, best writer in the country, bar none.
I'm sure there are plenty of people in Bristol that are fans of the show.
might be aiming.
If that doesn't answer the question for everyone out there, I don't know what will.
Well, anyway, Tebow Gate, trying to find the coach that did not vote Tebow to the first team, all for the all-SEC preseason team to the first team. It was not a unanimous selection. Knocked off three more candidates today. We're down to four finalists for tomorrow. We have
finalists.
Yeah, finalists for the great shaming that will take place.
Public flocking.
Yeah. There's Gene Chizik from Auburn, Steve Spurrier from South Carolina, Les Miles from LSU, and our boy Lane Kiffin from Tennessee. Should be really fun. I think we're all still praying that we get down to the situation where we have 10 denials in hand. Lane Kiffin comes up to the podium. We can hit him with that, and then he either has to own up to it, or if he did it, still lie, and then by doing so, call another coach a liar for not coming out and admitting it. We also had something really interesting today from Nick Saban, who, if you're familiar with Nick Saban, you know he dropped a 9/11 Pearl Harbor reference when Alabama lost to Louisiana and Monroe a couple years ago. He started going down that road today, not nearly as far, but he said that he voted for Tebow, and then he said, but you know what? It's every coach's right. There's a reason why the ballots are private. Everyone has a right to vote for who they want to. And then he said a lot of people have fought and died for that right in this country throughout history, which is taking it too far. There was a lot of laughter in the audience when that happened. What did you guys think of that?
Yeah, it was funny. He got real, like, soapboxy for a little bit there. He was just saying how he didn't think the media should be even asking them in the first place, which I don't agree with because it's obviously something kind of stupid. And if the coach, you know, whoever should actually did it just should have said they did it from the beginning so all the other coaches didn't have to go through this, which I think it would have been nice if one of the coaches kind of called out this, you know, anonymous Jevon Snead voter. But it was definitely funny to see him up there and kind of blowing this whole thing more out of proportion than we were.
That was definitely the high point of the day.
Yeah, that was great. And it was funny, too, one of the other reporters that was there with us, when Saban was kind of preaching on this freedom of speech thing and how that's in the Constitution, the other reporter was like, well, apparently he forgot about freedom of the press because it's right there in the same amendment it's covered, because he was getting upset that, you know, he felt like reporters were manufacturing this into a story, which is absolutely true. But it's been a fun one and something to look forward to for sure. I know we ran down the last podcast, you know, what we thought about all the candidates. Pretty much kept us, you know, all in the ball game with what happened today. We still got our big two horses running tomorrow.
Yeah.
so let's run through them real quick. Let's start with Les Miles.
No chance. Somebody just wrote, one of my friends just wrote on my Facebook that he thinks for sure it's Les Miles, and I told him no chance.
People have a really bad view of Les Miles, I think, that have never, like, seen him or heard him speak really at length. He's a pretty nice guy. He's pretty reasonable, and I think he has a decent relationship with Tebow from recruiting him. So, yeah, I think that one's pretty much out the window. We'll go in reverse likelihood from Miles. Steve Spurrier next. This has been – he's been kind of a late gainer in this race. He's kind of come on late. I still think no chance, but I'm hearing more and more people say, yeah, I think it's Spurrier. Still think that is borderline retarded. He's always been a Tebow fan. He voted for him for Heisman. Why would he not vote him for first-team All-SEC? he likes him. He admires him as a quarterback. And this notion that Spurrier is jealous of Florida having success without him is stupid. And I really don't like that. There hasn't been any evidence to suggest that.
There's no chance it's Spurrier. And it's just it's you guys have kind of accused me a little bit of wanting it to be Lane Kiffin. That's why I think it. I think anybody who thinks it's Spurrier just wants it to be Spurrier because of the storyline that like would then come into play. But I just don't think there's any chance it's him.
And for what it's worth, Tebow told, I think, Joe Shad in an interview that he doesn't think it was Spurrier. So, for what it's worth,
great reporting by Joe Shad. the other thing that's interesting, I think, I forgot what I was going to say, but let's move on now. We got the last two. The dark horse is Gene Chizik, or the dark horse is Gene Chizik, and then the heavy favorite is Lane Kiffin, although he does have a denial in his corner. He already denied this once. So, what do you guys think of the odds that we get Lane Kiffin up there tomorrow admitting it? Well,
he is an honest man, so I'm sure his you know, word is true. I think these are good chances of denial. They did 11 denials.
You're leaning towards all-out denial from everyone?
If it's Kiffin, he's definitely going to deny it, and it'll be all denials. But I think if it's Chizik, he's just going to obviously admit it.
Okay, so do you think there's any chance that it is Kiffin and Kiffin admits it?
No.
No. Wow.
Do we have any evidence to suggest that Lane Kiffin is a liar? We have evidence to suggest that Lane Kiffin is stupid and doesn't watch what he says, but has he lied a lot in public?
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess nothing, like, completely stone cold, but he manipulates a lot of situations. Like, he wasn't totally forthcoming with the way the Raiders situation went down, I felt like, from his perspective. And then the whole, like, I'm turning Florida in for a recruiting violation thing, like, that was, you could say, like, he honestly thought that and he didn't know the rules, but he was, like, a recruiting, like, head at USC before and stuff. And, like, I feel like he is not beyond saying something that he doesn't at least know to be true or saying something that he knows isn't true just to stir some stuff up.
I don't know. I think this is different from those situations that, like, it's something that he did that there will be, like, a fair amount of evidence to prove, like, stacking up against him at that point that I can't imagine him, like, just straight up lying about that. And he has been very complimentary of Tebow. That's one thing he never really attacked. So, I don't know. I'm still kind of leaning Chizik.
Don't you guys think whoever did this, though, was, like, really regretting it now? Like, I'm sure whoever it was would go back and completely change their vote just to, like, get rid of this whole circus.
If the sports information department at whatever school is anything like Florida's, they're preparing a press release right now on the merits of Kevin Snead and why their coach voted for him. Because, I mean, you notice the arrest thing. Florida sent out that press release talking about the arrest under Urban Meyer with a detailed breakdown how it's not really that bad. I'd like to see something like that with this.
All signs point to Chizik at this point. I'll kind of admit that. But I'm definitely not going to underestimate Lane Kiffin's curmudgeonry, how do you put it in the paper?
I thought it was curmudgeonry. It might be curmudgeonliness.
Curmudgeonliness.
Some debate.
Either way, I'm not underestimating Lane Kiffin's ability to do something ridiculous and then lie about it. Like, I think he's totally that kind of a guy. And it wouldn't shock me at all to get 11 denials, at which point we'll probably all turn to each other and say it's probably Lane Kiffin.
Here's the thing about this story. It kind of started off as like, whoa, that's kind of ridiculous. Tebow wasn't a unanimous selection. Then it seemed like it was just kind of the Florida beat writers interested in this. Someone went and asked Lane Kiffin from the Associated Press. Then it kind of died off till media days. In the early goings, it was all Florida beat writers and us asking these coaches who they voted for. Now it's gotten big, you know, like Joe Shad is going out of his way to eliminate someone before the day comes. Like, this has become a national story, and I don't think it's necessarily deserving of that at all. It's ridiculous.
I'm going to throw something out there. We're all sitting in a freezing cold room for about 4 hours every day, 4.5 hours, and the coach's portion takes up about half of each team's time, maybe a little slightly more even. And it's largely pretty boring, the coaches that get up there and talk. I like it much better when we get to talk to the players. So I think at first it started off, this is exactly like the other question I'll bring up, but it started off as like, okay, somebody from Florida Beat asked a question because it's obviously something that pertained to them, and probably at least half the room groaned and thought, like, please don't ask that question, who cares? But as time goes on and we get more increasingly bored in that room and we want somebody to say something cool, it's become like it's energized the room. Like the reporter's like, sweet, we get to play the Tebow game today. And like we get to see what they're going to say. And then unfortunately, it's kind of turned into like this big national thing. But it was kind of like the question that one of the guys keeps asking, which is if you had to pick a coach in the SEC that's not your coach, who would it be? The first time he asked that question, I was kind of like, ah, that's a stupid question. And then as we kept getting a wide array of answers and reactions, kind of like we do with the coaches, it's become like the highlight of my day, like waiting to see like what these players are going to say and how they react, much like we've been waiting for what the coaches are going to say and how they react. So I think that's kind of how it's picked up steam.
This is like something that we as reporters kind of created or pushed harder to entertain ourselves these couple days.
Right.
And now it's like gotten legs and we can't stop it. And my question is, we just saw it on SportsCenter a minute ago where they're breaking down all the reactions of the coaches. Now that's fun. That's fun to watch.
Right.
It's funny to see these guys get up there and just right off the bat say, it wasn't me, all right? So my question is, how much do fans really care? Now, I've gotten a lot of texts and calls and, like, Facebook messages, people asking to find out. But it's like a big joke. It's like, did you find that infidel who didn't vote for you? Like, that kind of stuff. And these are, like, Florida State students. So it's, like, being sarcastic, like, how dare someone not vote for Tebow? Like, it's fun more than anything. But I don't want it to get mistaken as, like, a real hard news story.
I think something that also helped create this is the first two reactions we got were almost priceless. Because it wasn't just a quick, like, yes, I voted for him, I think he's a great player, or no, I voted for him, and here's why, and then, like, a quick move on, or even a Nick Saban speech about how we're all stupid for making this into a story. It was a hilarious answer from Petrino, and then a hilarious answer from Bobby Johnson.
And Rich Brooks.
So it was instantly like, oh, the coaches think this is entertaining, too. Like, we'll just have a good time with this. And then it just kind of picked up legs, like you said, and now no one can stop it.
So, say we do get an answer tomorrow. Well, if we don't get an answer, I bet you Kiffin gets an extra question about it later in his session and somebody really pushes him on it. That'd be kind of interesting. But if we do get an answer, say Gene Chizik, if Spurrier were to get up there and say, I didn't vote for Tebow, it'd be like, whoa, everybody would be kind of taken aback and there'd probably be some discussion. If Gene Chizik gets up there and says, yeah, I didn't vote for Tebow, I voted for Jevon Snead, like, I think he's a better passer, would it just be over?
Yeah. I think it would be because it's justified in that case, and it's not like, I think it's if it's Kiffin or something, people like, you know, think it's out of spite or something. But if it's Chizik, it's like honest and like no one really cares as long as he meant it.
Okay. Yeah, there's no storyline behind the Chizik thing other than he has some kind of history with Jevon Snead. I think if he went up there and made like a real like argument based on logic, then I don't think people would kill him too much. And I don't think, to answer your question kind of before, I don't think the fans really care too much about this. I think it's kind of, it's like you said, it's just fun to see everyone's reaction and like play all the way through like the list of coaches' reaction. It's just kind of like interesting.
So of the coaches that we saw today, what did you see from them? What did you like, dislike? I mean, this was your guys' first interaction with a lot of these coaches. I'm curious to see what you thought of them.
So I just go down the list.
Yeah, Mark Richt started it off, Georgia.
I like Drake. I thought he came off really well to me. I know you were maybe not as sold on him as I am, but I think he came off well.
Well, I liked Rick significantly less than I guess the two of you heading into today from, you know, no personal experience, just from what I know of him through the media and some stuff with his coaching. And I definitely he did nothing to change that opinion today. Like a guy like Bobby Petrino, I came in not liking, and he got up there and was funny and personable and stuff. So even if he is really a D-bag underneath, he came across pretty well. At least I felt like Rick was like very vanilla. I feel like he didn't really care to be there. He actually got a little like short with you, McCall, on a couple of your questions, which I thought was funny because you were like, oh, Rick's the man. Like, he'll be awesome.
I had a really good experience one-on-one with Mark Rick last summer, and I was all excited.
Do you remember what you asked him today? I don't quite remember.
Yeah, I asked him one thing about moving the Florida-Georgia game to here real soon. We'll get to that later. We'll talk about it.
So yeah, I just wasn't impressed with Rick. Yeah.
His personality was, like, not as good as some of the others.
He's been a lot better in the past in his defense.
Okay.
But anyway.
I'm at least glad you guys are willing to admit this was not his finest moment.
Yeah. Next up, we have Lord Saban from Alabama, who I was here at his first media day, which was like a mixture of hero worship and total hatred. There's a lot of South Florida media here crucifying him for leaving the Dolphins, or a lot of Alabama fans here all over him, just loving him. And I thought he did well then, and I think he did well now. I mean, yeah, that whole, like, ridiculous dying for the right to vote for the wrong quarterback thing was a little silly. But other than that, I mean, I like him. He gives well thought out responses. Doesn't seem like he doesn't want to be there to me. I mean, I thought he's all right.
Yeah, I like Sabrina. The trumpet sound as he enters the room and whatnot. As promised, there was a large contingent of Alabama fans there waiting to have their baby signed and whatnot. But he carries himself with a certain air of sophistication, I guess.
I think he's a smart football guy from the X's and O's standpoint, too. I think when you listen to him talk about football and the program and stuff, like, a lot of times college football is like, as you've called it, recruiting is the bloodline of college football, where like it's all about recruiting, it's all about getting the guys there, it's all about team chemistry and like all this kind of other stuff. Whereas I think he talks a lot about doing things strategically on the field and stuff when he's up there at the podium, which I thought was a little bit actually different and nice to hear from a coach. And yeah, he didn't come across too ridiculous, although he did come across a little bit like kind of how I expected, which is if he doesn't get a question that he thinks is to his liking, he's going to kind of let you know it.
Yeah, I thought he was less harsh than I thought he would be. I thought he was much more diplomatic and like.
But do you feel like he fielded a question that would warrant like some sort of negative reaction with like, well, you're like, oh, I thought that was going to go bad, but it didn't? Because I feel like the only questions that were questionable, we got something like the.
Yeah,
he didn't get any really for that, right?
Questions. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think Saban's a pretty good, you know, head of a program. It's a good face to have in your program. And we were also talking afterward, like, I think. We all agreed on this. The one coach in the SEC most likely to be really good friends with Urban Meyer would be Nick Saban. I mean, they're both Belichick disciples, and they kind of handle things the same way. After that, we had Houston Nutt from Ole Miss, the sudden darling of the SEC. Ole Miss is a hot pick to win the SEC West, maybe even the conference. What'd you guys think of Houston Nutt?
I think Ole Miss needs to be really careful, because if I were Houston Nutt, I would have played it as – we haven't done anything yet. We've still never been to Atlanta as a program. We still lost X amount of games last year. We still, you know, have a lot to accomplish that we didn't do last year. One pretty good year doesn't change everything. I think he played it a little bit too much like, yeah, you guys are right. We're real good this year. We're going to have to deal with that change of pace because we're usually real bad. So
he did play it, though, like they're just still building up. Like they're not there or anything. But it's got to be a big sigh of relief for him to not suck.
Right.
But don't you guys think it's like important to have confidence as a program and like expect to be good and expect to matter and not just like take it?
It's definitely important that you expect to win. But I feel like he could have tried to taper like the expectations surrounding them a little bit. I know he was saying like, oh, we want to be ranked number one in the polls and stuff like that. Like we want that kind of attention. It's good. It's good for the program and everything, which he's right. I just don't, I feel like he may be setting himself up for a fall here.
Yeah. Houston, that's traditionally not done well when he's ranked highly. So usually he sneaks in under the radar when he's like lower ranked.
I think Ole Miss is really, really good too. In no way am I predicting a fall for Ole Miss. I think they're a legit program. I think they will play in Atlanta this year for the first time. But I was just, it's just something that kind of struck me while I was listening to him speak. Other than that, though, like really nice guy, came across well-spoken. Like he was cool to listen to for his time that he was up there.
Yeah, he's definitely Southern preacher-like. And then last up, we had Urban Meyer. This was kind of funny. Beforehand, I took a poll of how long Urban Meyer was going to speak before he opened it up for questions. One of the times, I don't remember which year when I was here, he just kind of walked up there and said, all right, good to see you guys. I'll take any questions. Normally they give kind of an opening monologue, but he just kind of wants to get in and get out. So we had a lot of guesses. I took 25 seconds, which is really short. Dan Mullen talked for like 5 or 6 minutes.
Probably more than five or six minutes.
Like it was 30. It was a long time.
It was like, I think it was 15 or 20.
Okay.
It was really long.
Yeah. So most of the guys are probably in like the 6, 7, 8 minute range. I said 25 seconds. Someone said 45 seconds. We had a minute 15. I think you guys said like 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah. And I thought he'd do a little bit.
It was 47 seconds that he talked. By far the shortest out of anyone, I think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Meyer handled things pretty well. He does well on a big stage with the media. I don't think he particularly likes talking to the media, especially down in Gainesville. I think we've all gotten to see a little bit of that. But he did a good job today. Something a little weird from today was that Brandon Spikes, who was supposed to make the trip, him and Tebow were going to be the two players here talking. Spikes did not come because he did not want to. He had like stage fright, I guess. He said he felt nervous.
Too shy.
Here. Yeah, one thing that sounds ridiculous, and it is ridiculous, but
Spikes is really good with the media, but I've seen where he has to kind of get pushed out to talk to reporters. I've seen that in the tunnel at the Swamp. I don't think he really enjoys it, but he's really good when he's very personable and funny, and that's why it's a real shame he wasn't here, because I think he would have been a good kind of ambassador for the program.
And I understand what you're saying, but I don't think shy is the right word. It's not like he, like, clams up and gets nervous. Like, it's more of, I think he just doesn't like talking to the media for whatever reason. Maybe, you know, he gets asked a lot of stupid questions. Some athletes don't like that. Whatever it is. Or maybe there's a lot going on with him with the NFL stuff, his brother, whatever he doesn't want to talk about. So I think we all kind of agree that there's probably a situation where they volunteered him for it early on. He probably maybe wasn't too hot on it. He maybe even, like, asked out a couple times, but half-heartedly. And then when it came time at the end to kind of put up and go, he said, you know, I'm really not doing this. Take Stamper instead.
Yeah, for anyone out there who doesn't know about Brandon Spikes' brother, he's in jail on a murder charge that was a little shady, and Spikes really wants to get to the NFL so he can hire a good lawyer and try and get his brother out. And this is a story that we actually reported first in the Alligator 2 years ago, and then since then it's been like gradually other people waking up to it. And anytime there's a big media appearance for Brandon Spikes, he's getting hammered with those questions one after the next after the next.
And it's tough.
And I know he's really emotional about it, because when I talked to him about it, he was really emotional about it. So I think that probably played into it a little bit too. But they did send Ryan Stamper, and I think he was pretty solid. Everybody had good things to say about him. He talked a little smack about Tennessee. So we'll try and throw some quotes into this podcast if we can. We all missed it.
I'm very upset we missed it, because the way it was set up, like, throughout SEC Media Days is the coaches talk on stage at the podium for their time being. Then they do players at small tables in either corner of the room where the reporters just huddle around. And Tebow is such a big presence, and everyone wants to hear what he has to say, that it'd be really hard to huddle around him. So they just did him at the podium as well. And he's the only player who got that kind of treatment. And I thought they were going to do Stamper afterwards in, like, a normal manner, but they did Stamper in a different room that they didn't do any of the other players while Tebow was at the podium, and I just totally missed it, and I was kind of upset.
Yeah. Well, we were all listening to the sermon, so none of us were
up in the middle of church.
Yeah. The Tebow's press conference was a little bit more like a sermon. He was actually kind of, it was like he was dispatching advice to a lot of the reporters.
Parting wisdom.
He couldn't have done a better job. I mean, he was excellent up there. He was flawless, and it's amazing to see how far he's come since I remember him talking in high school, like at pep rallies or something like that, or he spoke at FCA one morning, very nervous and jittery, and now he just, like, he owns the room. It's pretty impressive. But one thing that I know bothered all of us is that Meyer and Tebow will not come off the "we just won to win the SEC championship this year" talk. Tebow said last year, and Kyle even tried to get him to go this way.
That's a bad question. The way I phrased it was crappy, and he took the part, of course, that he could to get out of answering me. So.
But Kyle said, you know, you said after the Ole Miss loss last year, we wanted to go undefeated, something that's never been done here before. Like, that's clearly big on your list of priorities. So going into this year, after you won a national title, bringing everyone else back, that's the only place to go.
Right.
Like, you lost one game, losing no games would be the next place. He didn't bite. He just said we want to win the SEC championship, which Meyer said too. I've always thought it's stupid, but I think they just play it like the BCS is a crapshoot. So if we win the SEC, we know we're pretty much in there. But here's a quote. We do have some quotes from Ryan Stamper, and this is a good one.
I should have asked a follow-up now that I think of it. Because he said something to me like, oh, you know, if we lose in a game and still win the national championship, I'll happily take that. And I should have said, I probably gave the mic back too quick anyway, but I should have said, well, would you take an SEC championship and not play in the national championship game?
Yeah.
If he said yes, he's just lying at that
right.
point. So
exactly.
I screwed up. My bad.
But sorry.
I let everyone down.
Let the world down. So Ryan Stamper on this topic is much better. I mean, he goes with the company line, but also, like, is a little honest about it. He says, "We are focused on winning the SEC championship. I'd be lying if I said the national championship hadn't crossed our mind, but we know if we win the SEC, our chances to play for the national championship are much higher." That's a little better way to look at it, where he's not straying off the Urban Meyer doctrine too much. But anyway, another topic that came up today. There are so many questions about Tebow this week. It's unbelievable. Every coach is getting asked about him. That's partly my fault because I have to do something about his NFL prospects. But a lot of people asking questions to Mullen and Meyer about what annoying habits Tebow might have, and everyone trying to delve into this. Every player gets asked about Tebow. Today, I think it crossed the line a little bit, but let's talk about it. Kyle, what happened?
We all agree that it crossed the line today, although Tebow handled it very well and perhaps wasn't even too, like, upset about it. But after we left, we found out that in a radio media interview, I think it was radio, right? Somebody asked him if he was saving himself for marriage, and he said yes, kind of irrelevantly, said yes to me anyway, because I just don't feel like he should have been asked, put in that kind of position. I know he's kind of become like this messenger for Christianity, and it's a role that he really embraces and stuff, but it's just not the time or the place to ask him that kind of question. I kind of said, like, it's one thing to ask him after he speaks at a church or a youth group or something like that, but I think it's something very different to ask him something that personal, because you would not ask it to any other player here.
Right, and one thing I was saying is that I don't feel like he's opened himself up to those questioning from sports journalists. That's stupid. It shouldn't have been asked. But once he was asked, I don't feel like he had the option of not answering, because I think he's made that such a platform that he can't just back off of it and not say it without looking kind of hypocritical. But
I mean, that's a really personal question, though. I think if he didn't want to answer, he didn't have to.
It is, but it's something that I know he has spoken about at churches and youth groups, and it's something that he's put out there. Now, he hasn't put it out there to whatever radio reporter asked him. I'm sure the radio reporter is just trying to stir something up. That would have been a great soundbite. I'm sure it is anyway. But here's what happened. I think Tebow could not have handled this any better. He said, yes, I am. And then someone else tried to ask a follow-up question. They were kind of stuttering and stumbling through it, I guess, because they were shocked. And he said, I think you're stunned right now. You can't even ask a question. I was ready for that question, but I don't think y'all were. And I think he handled that so perfectly. It was a really good job by Tim. Not only sticking, you know, coming through on what he preaches about, but then also, you know, handling a really awkwardly placed question. I'd like to know what that was sandwiched between.
Yeah, I don't know how you really lead into that. It's just like, I can't really imagine a segue.
I mean, I think it was in a big room, kind of like ours, but the radio room, and someone probably said, how are you guys going to handle the high expectations on your team going this year? Oh, blah, 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 we just want to win the SEC. Tim, are you a virgin?
Yeah.
I hope that's how it went down, actually.
I think the only way you could do it is, as a reporter, you want to put questions that you have yourself on, like, the, like, people in general. So, like, somebody who might have grabbed the mic and said something to the effect of, like, what would you say to kids out there who are struggling with celibacy? Are you yourself a virgin? You know, something like that, where he could have played it off on, like, don't address me, address the people, you know? So I think that's the only way it could have been snuck in and not been weird. Somebody's grabbed the mic and said, are you a virgin? Like, I feel bad that it went down like that.
All right, and another little thing that I had to work on today was about the Florida-Georgia game. There's only two games contracted left to play, the 2009 and 2010 games. Normally, at this point in the contract, Florida and Georgia, because this is just a deal between Florida and Georgia, the conference is not involved. Normally, by this point, they've got a deal worked out. So it's kind of, I mean, they're still in the range. They'll probably try and get it done before the season starts. The game's in Jacksonville now. Mark Richt and Damon Evans, the athletic director at Georgia, both come out saying they would like to see it moved. I don't know how much support there is for that. I mean, I know some Georgia fans complain about it all the time, but in reality, if they hadn't lost 16 of the last 19 meetings, they wouldn't be complaining that much about it. Joe Cox, I thought, the quarterback for Georgia, said something really cool today. I like this. He was like, I don't know why they want to move the game to Atlanta or even alternate it, because the stadium's still going to be split 50-50. I guess they want to put it in Atlanta just to see more Georgia fans outside the stadium, but I like the game. The weather's good in Florida. I like going down there and playing. I thought that was a really good response from him. He stopped short of saying it's just because Georgia loses that, you know, Coach Rick's upset about this, but when I asked Coach Rick about it, this is when he got a little short with me, and he said, look, I just want to focus on winning that game. And then I said, so you don't care where it's played? And he said, I'm going to say it again. I just don't care. I don't care. I just want to win the game, like, blah, blah, blah.
It was even worse than that, too. It was like, what do you want to do about the game? And he's like, here's what I want to do. And, like, you're like, okay, maybe he's going to give an answer. I want to focus on winning that game. And I was like, come on, man. Like, just at least answer the question.
I think Cox is right. I don't think it matters where the game is, like, played. I mean, you're from Jacksonville. There's always tons of Georgia fans. That's actually a pretty big bulldog country, right, from what you're telling me?
There are actually a lot of Georgia fans in Jacksonville. And another big factor of it is that the fans in South Georgia and Southeast Georgia don't get to go to Athens for a lot of games. So this is closer for them. And, you know, it's still part of their fan base that they're trying to serve. Another thing, Fernandina Beach, Amelia Island, a lot of Georgia fans come down, rent a house, rent a condo there, make a weekend of it. Georgia schedules its fall break around this, or I know they did. I don't know if they still do. So students have the Friday off at least to get down there. I mean, it's a cool thing. It's really not that big deal. They're not losing because they're driving to Jacksonville. And I think part of the reason why Rick was so short with me today is because earlier this year, he made a statement that Jacksonville isn't really a neutral site, and that if people want a neutral site, like, maybe they wouldn't mind putting in Atlanta for a change or something. And he got in, I guess some people were asking him questions about that, and he got upset about it. And but one of the things Rick said in that statement was that, you know, he said, Florida drives, we have to fly. It's cooler for them and hotter for us than we're used to practicing. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that there's a weather advantage that he's trying to put
it, it is ridiculous what he's saying, and I don't think the Georgia Dome is any more a neutral site than Jacksonville is. It just goes the other way instead. And I talked to Jeff Owens today, who is who's their senior defensive tackle. Really cool guy. Nice guy to talk to. You can check him out. He has a blog online, actually, which he was talking about potentially interviewing Tim Tebow for. So we'll see if that actually goes down. But anyway, he said what he would like to do. At first, he's like, yeah, I'd like to see him do something different, move it up to the Dome. And he's like, I'd like to have it on a rotation where, you know, it goes back and forth between the Georgia Dome and Jacksonville, which is cool. Like, I think maybe that's something both sides can try to work out, or do a home and home, or do what you always talk about, which is a four-year rotation where it's played home and home and then at the two sites. But, you know, it's got to be somewhere met in the middle. It's not going to just swing the other way completely. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, the Atlanta thing they're proposing is to go either – from Jacksonville, Atlanta, Jacksonville, Atlanta, like that, or Jacksonville three times and Atlanta once. Atlanta once every 4 years because it's normally a four-year contract. Now, they've also talked about making the contract longer this time to just lock it in. If they do that, I think it might just be Jacksonville. I mean, there's really not that big of a reason to change the game. It's just Rick gets a lot of criticism for always losing to Florida because that's something that Vince Dooley didn't do at Georgia. He beat Florida like a drum down there. So kind of to deflect some of the criticism, he can use this, like, oh, this isn't fair that we have to play there. Let's come play in Atlanta. When in reality, if they go play in Atlanta with the way things have been going the last 19 years, I guess, probably not going to change just because they move it to another stadium where Florida usually plays well.
Right. See, I think it should be a home and home, because I think you're going to have the best atmosphere at either stadium. Could you imagine if Georgia came to Gainesville and, like, the atmosphere that would draw?
I changed my mind on this at least three times a year. But I used to be that way. I've changed my mind. When they were rebuilding what was the Gator Bowl into what then was Alltel Stadium, what is now Jacksonville Municipal Stadium, they played home and home, and I don't think it was as memorable for the fans that I've talked to that have been there, that they said they liked it better with the neutral site. And I did like what the player said, like, this is what makes it unique. This is what makes it a flagship game for the conference that everybody remembers. And Mike Slive, I asked the SEC commissioner what he thought about the game, and he said, you know, we don't have a hand in it. We don't really care. It's the game that matters. They can play it wherever they want. It's the game itself that's the issue, and that's what's always going to be there.
I agree, though. Having it in Jacksonville gives it this, like, reputation with some other, like, big games across the country, like the Red River Shootout that's played at a neutral site between Texas and Oklahoma, and games like that where it's like a different type atmosphere. It's a neutral site game, and I really think the winner, there's no crutch. It's like that team was clearly the better team. It's not like they went on the road and lost in a hostile environment. So I think it would hurt the game itself a little bit, and it probably hurt the fan experience a lot if they moved it away from a neutral site.
Yeah, one last news item to get to about Florida. Receiver Riley Cooper was drafted by the Texas Rangers. He's been kind of flirting with going. He's not sure if he's going to sign or try and play football yet. According to the Miami Herald today, Cooper can sign his contract with the Rangers and still play his season of football. I'm not really sure how that works, but that's what the Rangers said, so I guess we'll take their word for it. Meyer and Tebow were both asked what they think Cooper's going to do today. They both said they didn't know. They're both probably lying. So we'll see. We'll see what comes out of that. I can understand that they want Cooper to be able to make this decision and then make it public himself without them doing it in Alabama.
Well, Meyer was hilarious because he was going to say, I'll know by the end of the week. And he started to say, I'll know by the end of the week. And he's like, I mean, today is what, Wednesday? And then it was like Thursday. And he's like, oh, all right, maybe the weekend. I'll know by the weekend for sure. Like, he kind of like pushed it back. Yeah. It was really funny to watch.
All right, well, now let's move on to some other topics of discussion from this week. Jevon Snead, the Mississippi quarterback, has been another hot topic of discussion this week, not only because he's probably the one that stole the magical vote from Tebow and the preseason All-SEC team, but also because it looks like Ole Miss is going to be really good this year. Snead's getting a lot of pub. I know, Kyle, you wrote a story about Jevon Snead for the paper. Why don't you talk about your impressions of him, what you think about it?
Jevon Snead talked to us for about 20 minutes today, which was, I think, a little bit longer than some of the athletes. It's just the way it worked out. And he was very polite, good with the media, but I kind of said afterwards he, like, politely didn't answer anyone's question, really. He danced around a lot of stuff, and he tried to say all the politically correct stuff, so to speak. But I think he's really proven himself last year, especially in the second half of last year, as a really quality quarterback. A lot of people have him in the top five for the Heisman race preseason. And I happen to think he's a really, really good player. He's a guy who committed to Florida initially, if you don't know, when he found out, you know, the Tebow ship
wasn't
was sailing.
A linebacker.
Yeah, when he found out Tim Tebow wasn't going to play linebacker, he went to play at Texas, where he actually played for a year. And then Colt McCoy came in, beat him out. He transferred to Ole Miss, initially committing to Ed Ogeron then was removed from Ole Miss, and he now plays for Houston Nutt. So that's kind of the Jevon Snead file. He's a great player, in my opinion. He seemed to be a pretty nice guy. And I think he's got a lot to prove also, because he's left some situations where he said, you know, he felt like there wasn't a spot for him. And I think he's got a lot to prove that, you know, maybe some teams made some wrong decisions.
And Snead's, like, seemingly connected to every great storyline in college football this season.
Right.
From Lane Kiffin to the Gators, everything. It just really adds up well.
Yeah, which is kind of what the column is about. It's kind of how Jevon Snead has all these connections throughout his travels through the football universe. And it's especially interesting because the Big 12 has been, like, pushing the SEC for a top conference supremacy, and he's played in both conferences and has a lot of connections in those conferences. He, of course, danced around a question about which is better and the differences, but he did say he thinks the SEC is the best, but he kind of said anyone playing in their conference is going to say their conference is the best. He said maybe the defenses were a little bit better, but he didn't make any strong statements, so he danced around that one, too.
Yeah, I'm definitely more in the boat that Snead still has something to prove, and Ole Miss in general still has a little something to prove for me. I think they're going to be good. I think they'll have a shot at winning the West. I think Jevon Snead will have a shot at, you know, winning some awards, doing really well in the SEC, but I'm not totally so sold on either one yet. I mean, looking through their season last year, all right, they started off by pwning Memphis, then they lost a really close game at Wake Forest. Then they pwned Samford. Then they lost to Vanderbilt. Then they had the magical win in the Swamp. Then they lost to South Carolina, lost to close one to Alabama, beat Arkansas by 2, beat Auburn by 10. Auburn was terrible. Beat the crap out of Louisiana in a row, 59-0. Then they beat LSU. That was when things like really got big. And then they beat Mississippi State like a drum, 45-0.
And then they won their bowl game against Texas Tech, which was very impressive.
Right. Killed Tech in the bowl game, which was really
so impressive. I think they did well in the late part of the season, but since I haven't seen Snead and Ole Miss perform for a whole season yet, I'm not ready yet to throw all my support behind them. I would like to see them do well. I'm always for changing the status quo a little bit. I'd love to see the two Mississippi teams battle it out for the West one year.
I know he had some bad games early on in the season, and he kind of figured it out as he went along, but I was really impressed with his poise in the Swamp. I mean, when he was there, he played very well for them, was a big, big reason why they won, and made some really nice throws in that game and showed that he's not afraid to compete at the highest level against the best teams, which is what you need your quarterback to be able to do. And I think it would just be a magical season for Ole Miss if they can make it to the SEC championship game, possibly get into a BCS game, and Jevon Snead just ends up in New York. He doesn't even have to be a top three finisher, but he just gets invited to New York for the Heisman presentation. I think Ole Miss fans would just be, they could die happy after that.
So I'm not so sure. I'm not just sold on Ole Miss, so the rest of you guys are. I think there's too many roadblocks in the West. I think LSU is not great, but they're going to be a problem. I think Alabama is definitely the team to beat in the West, even if they lose their quarterback. I think they have enough weapons to make up for it, and I think it's just too much for them to overcome.
Well, this is also something interesting looking at Ole Miss. They start off the year on the road at Memphis, play Southeast Louisiana or whatever. They go to South Carolina and to Vanderbilt, both very winnable. They get Alabama, Tennessee, and LSU all at home. They have to go to Auburn and have to go to Mississippi State, going to Mississippi State.
Right. That's the thing, too. Their schedule is stacking up for them to just run through it, or at least have not too many trip-ups. And I'm big on Alabama. I picked them to win last year. I thought they would be good. They were. I like Nick Saban a lot as a coach. I think Alabama's very good. I'm not sold on LSU at all. They have really something to prove to me. They were bad last year, and it looked like they packed it in halfway through the season. They lost a lot of games late. They almost lost to Troy. It was just like really things were getting really bad for LSU in a hurry, and I don't think they've brought in so much more talent than they had last year to the point where it's like LSU is a team to beat all of a sudden. So I think Alabama and now Ole Miss has earned the right to put their names up there at the top two spots in that side of the conference.
So what would be the dream scenario next year? For me, it would be this, for us covering Florida. And also, this would go hand-in-hand with Florida fans, because really, covering the team, we just want to go as far and have as much fun as we can. So I think going undefeated, probably beating up, doing something weird to Lane Kiffin when they play Tennessee, some kind of timeout hijinks again. Playing Ole Miss in the SEC championship game would be awesome. I know a lot of people asked Tebow those questions today about, you know, the speech and whether he'd like to have another crack at Ole Miss and whether that's on his mind. And then playing, I think, USC in the national championship would be. I'm not saying USC is going to make it, but I'm saying from a national prestige standpoint, Florida's done more than USC in recent years, but USC still has that hold on the top spot in college football. And I think for Florida to go out to California and beat USC, probably my boy Emmanuel Moody running all up on his former team, that'd be really fun. I'd like to see that.
So you're all about revenge then.
What, and I also like, it's not as much, well, the Ole Miss thing, I would like to see a different team in the SEC championship game, and it'd be a good story.
The Ole Miss is definitely a good storyline. I'm totally with that. I think that's good for them.
But then hearing the Florida players gush about USC last year, Joe Hayden was talking about how Taylor Mays, the safety from USC, looks like a cartoon character to him. And he just created, like, these USC guys look like warriors. I'd love to see Florida play USC. I think that'd be really cool.
If Florida beats USC, is the torch officially passed at that point? I'd like them to play a good USC team because I just don't think this, even if we think this USC team's good, which I don't, but I know something like McCall does, we can all agree it's not near one of the best teams they've had the last 10 years or so. So I don't know how much it proves to beat them, kind of kick them when they're down, although you can make the argument how down would they be if they're in the championship game. But I do think if they beat USC, that's a statement. It's kind of officially passed at that point, and Florida's the new program to beat. But I think if they win a national championship regardless, the torch is passed.
Yeah, what would the dream scenario be for you guys next year?
So, yeah, I like to see Texas in the Rose Bowl and see Colt McCoy and Tim Tebow go at it in their final game as college players.
A new matchup instead of Bradford and some new blood.
I don't know what my dream scenario is. Part of me wants to see UF go undefeated because they've never done it before, and it would be like the top of the mountain, like for Tebow and everything. It would cement his legacy before he leaves. Part of me wants Tennessee to beat them, because I think that would be so insane, and like the media, like firestorm afterwards would just be nuts. And I kind of want to see that happen for some like sick reason. And I think they'll still rebound and, you know, probably win the rest of their games. As far as playing, I want them to play Ole Miss from a coverage standpoint in the championship game, if I could pick one team from the West. And in the national championship game, it's really tough for me to pick one team. I guess I don't want Oklahoma, even though I like Oklahoma better than Texas, because we've already seen that game play out. USC, you're kind of talking me into it, would be a little bit of a passing of the torch. But I really don't know where I stand. There's no one team that I'm picking in the national championship game. I think I just want them to play the best team that's out there, whoever that ends up being.
Yeah, I really just want a free trip to Pasadena.
Yeah, most important, absolutely.
Yeah, and it really surprised me the way that, you know, Florida fans still talk about. It's a really funny predicament that Florida fans have with the Ole Miss game last year. It's a loss in the swamp, so that they want to erase that from memory. They want that gone. Whenever they hear about it, they want to push it out of mind as fast as they can. But if that loss doesn't happen, we don't know if they go on and defeat their opponents by 30-something points a game. Tebow never makes the speech. And this is all such an important part of Florida lore. Maybe they don't win a national championship without that wake-up call. I don't even know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this odd predicament for Florida fans between wanting to like act like that game never happened, but also wanting to like preserve the good that came out of it.
Right.
So going undefeated, to me, that would be cool for Florida to do since they've never done it before. It'd be a good thing for Tebow to do in his last year.
Right.
I think we'd all like to see Tebow go out on top for he's given the university.
I already think he's done enough to be considered the best college player of all time. So I'd like for him to, you know, maybe repeat and win a Heisman this year so that there's no doubt, like nobody can really say anything against it, because I just think he's that good of a college player.
Yeah, I mean, when we walked out of there today, I was saying, this is so ridiculous. Like, there are very few, if any, athletes I can think of like this after we watched his sermon/interview session. The way that he handles everything as a college kid is baffling. And the things that he's put on his shoulders as far as, like, his ministry work and everything else and the team, it's just amazing. And the way that he plays on the field. I mean, it's gotten beyond the ridiculous threshold that I thought it would reach.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I don't really have much to add. But going back to the dream scenario, I've dreamt something up. It will only happen in my dreams, and this won't actually happen. I want all the other big teams out there to have two losses. So it's just Florida versus, like, insert team here. It's like a BCS, like, disaster. No one knows who the team's going to be. Utah gets a shot and goes undefeated. And this is finally the year they say, okay, everyone else has two losses. Utah's undefeated. We're throwing them in there. And it's Urban Meyer against Utah. Either outcome would be sweet to cover because either Utah, like, busts it all up and the BCS has to change, or Florida beats Utah, which is cool, and they win another national championship. So I mean, that's never going to happen, but that'd be awesome.
Well, let's keep in mind, by this point in the season, no doubt, Mississippi State has floundered so badly that Dan Mullen's on his way out, and Utah hires him to be the defensive coordinator of that national championship against Florida.
Sure. Why not? Yeah. No, we're already going this far. Yeah.
You know, another good BCS scenario, I think. Now, I don't know if USC is going to be able to, you know, put in the work to do this.
I got another good one.
If you get three undefeated teams, it would really mess up the BCS also. If you get USC, the Oklahoma-Texas winner, and then Florida, Ole Miss, whoever the SEC winner is, you get three undefeated teams, you got big problems, especially if you got big names like Tebow, McCoy, Bradford, and doesn't matter, USC, McKnight, whatever. You got all that involved? You got
Cannon.
Yeah. The BCS has problems if that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the BCS has overcome those kind of problems before this. I don't know. But yeah, it always puts a little bit more stress on the BCS when something like that goes down. Something else that would be cool that's never going to happen, but we're just throwing out dream scenarios here, is if, like, a Miami could suddenly, like, be awesome this year for some reason, like Randy Shannon just puts it together there, and they, like, run the table or go through the ACC with one loss and end up in a position to challenge, and it's a Florida-Miami national championship game. Like, just another scenario that won't happen, but would be cool to see.
I mean, this is getting out of control. You're talking, like, Notre Dame territory. Like, maybe Notre Dame.
That's another one.
I mean, I'm just throwing out ridiculous. All the plausible stuff is too boring, so I'm just going for really cool stuff.
Yeah. Mel Pryor, Ohio State.
No, that's not exciting to me at all. I don't want to watch an SEC school beat the crap out of the Ohio State national championship again. That's worst case scenario for me. That's a nightmare.
You know, talk about these dream scenarios. Looking back at when Florida won their first national title against Florida State, losing to Florida State at the end of the year, and then beating them in the national championship, that would have been a dream scenario. That's incredible, and I wish I had been either living in Florida and, like, able to appreciate that for what it was at the time, because that's so unbelievable, and that stuff just doesn't happen. That doesn't come along often enough. And that's the kind of thing that I wish I had been able to be a part of or, like, appreciate more at the time.
Yeah, you weren't here, but elementary schools were divided.
Really?
It was anarchy. You had to choose sides.
I'm firmly against rematch games unless it's a scenario where no other team is even, like, close to the topic, because you end up with a bad scenario where each team's won one game, and in my mind, you've really proven nothing at that point. So I feel like if we're the BCS is horrible, this all needs to change, and they just put us in a bad spot anyway. But if you're sticking to the every week's a playoff in the regular season scenario, like, rematch games aren't conducive to that kind of thinking.
Yeah, well, while we're on the topic of storylines, if you go to our website, that was a good transition.
Beautiful segue.
Yeah,
beautiful.
You go to our website, alligatorsports.org or alligator.org/sports, one of those works, try them both. We've started unleashing our list of the top 10 storylines in Gators athletics for the upcoming school year. The last two have been released right now. Number 10, how will the women's basketball team respond after 2 years of success? Amanda Butler's done a really good job since she got to Gainesville. And then number 9. Will off-the-field issues continue to be a problem for the Florida football program? Now, number 10, I know you guys had it pretty low on your list. I didn't have it on mine. Probably about where it belongs. It was in the running for those last couple spots. Well, we don't really need to discuss it.
I don't think it really matters.
No. You don't think the storyline matters?
I mean, I think we've talked about it to, like, a rough degree where there's something more to say. But, I mean, it's kind of, I think it's kind of irrelevant once football season starts. Once they start playing, all this stuff goes away.
Yeah, but once basketball season kicks in, it'll be semi-pertinent. Like, it'd be cool to see them kind of progress. And I think it's definitely, like, in the running for that 10 spot. Like, I don't have a problem with
right.
it. I think that's where I had it. So.
Yeah, one of the things when we were doing this that we were talking about is it's so hard to look through football season to the other side right now. it's really hard not to just throw all the football stuff on the top.
Right.
So with that in mind, the number nine selection, I know we were driving in the car and we did this vote, and we were just going through trying to eliminate the ones we definitely didn't want to vote for. And this is one of the ones that we struck down fairly early, mostly because it's something I really had a problem with. Because this off-the-field issue thing with the Florida program, we talked about it on the last podcast, really not that huge of a deal. I mean, everybody goes through this. Florida's no better and no worse than any other team. They're handling it. They don't have, like, terrible violent crimes going on. It's not like I wouldn't call it a program in disarray or running off the rails like some people have in their stories. So I don't think it's that big of a deal, and it's something that I'm really tired of hearing about because I feel like the people who push this story have lost all touch with reality, that this is how it works everywhere. It's just that Florida is winning, so it's a bigger deal.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that the way the numbers measure up against other programs, it's not a big deal. And it's not a situation where you're having people commit, like, serious crimes that stick, where the charges even stick. It's like they're getting arrested for stupid stuff or putting themselves in situations where they shouldn't have been put, but it's nothing where they're, like, menaces to society and really just doing horrible stuff for the most part. There are a couple of those cases. Those players have been removed from the program. I know after the Hornsby thing last summer, I kind of wrote a column really coming down on him and on, like, how the Florida program needs to be careful. But, I mean, I feel like that was kind of warranted with the Hornsby thing. We can all agree that was
they got rid of him immediately.
Right. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with the way they've handled the serious cases. And I just don't want to be feeding into it. So that's why I didn't vote for it.
Do you think that what you wrote last summer has kind of come true to this point, though, with all these arrests?
Kind of. I don't know. I just wrote that I think so, because I think my point was that they need to be careful, and that Gainesville, the Gators are on top now, and you need to be careful the image you're putting out there. So it was after the Hornsby thing, it was after the Patchen thing, which we don't really know what happened there and how innocent he was, and it was after the Joe Kim Noah comes back to town and gets slapped with a couple charges thing. So it was just kind of like, you know, Miami's taking a lot of crap from this, learn from it, don't go down that path type thing. And I think they've done a decent job. They could probably be better, but I think it's kind of come true at least that they weren't careful enough and perception's kind of taking over.
Right. Now, since the three of us left it off our list, that means the other three voters, we won't name names, but they must have had it fairly high on the list, probably somewhere in the middle. From their perspective, I'm sure it's, well, this is a storyline because everyone's still asking questions about it and still pushing it, so it should be one of the stories. So it is one of the storylines. I guess we're saying it shouldn't be because it's kind of a stupid discussion.
It's not. We're making a list when we vote of our storylines. When I turn in my ballot, it's Kyle Maestri's top 10 things. The top 10 things I'm watching this year. So that's what mine reflects. It's not the top 10 things being covered in the media right now. If we did an NFL storyline thing, I wouldn't put the Brett Favre thing, because even though it's the number one storyline on NFL Live and on ESPN, I'm not watching it because I don't care if a mediocre to horrible quarterback comes back and ruins the Vikings or not. I just don't care. So that's the way I voted, and that's probably the way all of us voted. I don't know if the other three voters voted like that or not. We haven't really gotten a chance to talk to them. But, you know, but like Nick Saban said, people died in this country for us to vote on off-season issues. So.
I mean, this is Florida, so we're all victims of a rigged election of some kind, apparently.
That's a good point. A very good point.
But what is kind of weird, and I kind of want to get their take on this, is that in order to cancel out all three of our non-votes, they would have had to put this fairly high on their list for it to crack the top 10, most likely. So I could be wrong on that. I don't know if, like, straight seventh places would have done it or not. I'm not sure what the break water number was, but the watermark number was. But if they did have it high, I'd like to hear somebody who had it, like, in a top five scenario explain why they had it that high.
I would, too, because I'd imagine that the mindset is the same as the way everybody else looks at the story, that it is a story. So they don't question it and just take it.
Right.
But I think not enough people look at this the way that we're talking about it right now, that, like, every fan wants to think their program is different. And that's probably in that, oh, this is all going to be handled in-house, it's all cool.
Well, that's not the case. But then when every fan wants to think that every other program is dirtier than theirs, that's also not the case. Like, you're not special. You're all the same. You're bringing the same kind of kids. You're all competing for the same guys. They're on the line between two schools. They go one place and get arrested. Who's not to say it wouldn't happen at the other place? Right. It's not because these guys are all either terrible disciplinarians or really good disciplinarians. Obviously, there's leeway, and you can have an effect on it. But it's not like Urban Meyer's running a dirty program or recruiting dirty players as compared to the rest of major college football.
I think this storyline was put in through executive order and not voting. I think there was maybe some tampering going on with the ballots.
Oh my goodness!
I think it came down from
this
above.
This is a very serious accusation.
Do you have any?
I have no proof. This is pure conspiracy theory and speculation.
Well, I'll tell you this much.
No, I don't think so. No, I'm gonna defend. People are gonna listen to this and get really pissed off. That's not what happened. That they just honestly thought that this was a storyline, which I'm okay with. They're completely entitled to their opinion. It's by no means as bad as Phil and McCall leaving off Brandon Spikes on their top 10 athletes list. So, not to name names. So I don't really have too much of an issue, and I'm definitely not going to accuse a couple of the other members of our staff and friends of just saying, screw it down, I'm going to do whatever I want here.
All right, well, before we do any damage, let's just get out of here. One storyline I forgot to mention that I had on mine that I don't think anyone agreed with me on was, will the gymnastics team finally win a Super 6 when it's in Gainesville? I guess I feel differently about this because me and Bobby Colobi went up and covered the gymnastics national championship when it was in Athens, and Florida got beat by Georgia pretty soundly, came in fourth, I think. And it was one of those things where I'm thinking, okay, Florida's great all year. They beat Georgia during the regular season. But then when it matters, Georgia comes out and is just gunning it. And the atmosphere in Georgia, all their fans around them was awesome. And I wanted to see what that would be like in Gainesville. I think that'd be cool. I don't think they're as good by any means. They don't have as great of a shot. But it's not outside of the realm of possibility. They'll be at the Super 6. They'll be there. They'll have a chance. And I'm really interested to see how it happens with the home crowd.
I got nothing on gymnastics. Good luck, girls.
My line of thinking on that was just that I tried to look at the storylines as kind of being unique to this year for the most part, unless it was like football team repeating, like something real big. Well, a repeat is not unique. So the gymnastics team, I felt like they don't have a legitimate chance to win the whole thing. And the fact that they're just a really good program is something that they do every year and nothing new. The only like new wrinkle, to use your guys' word, thing in this is that they'd be playing in Gainesville, which is kind of cool. So that's why I left it up, but I put that at like 11 or 12. It's a storyline to watch, just not a top 10 storyline to watch, in my opinion.
How big is the home gym advantage in gymnastics?
I have no
huge.
I'll tell you this much. At Georgia, it was pretty solid. I mean, the place was rocking. It was all about Georgia gymnastics. It was really impressive to see that kind of support for a gymnastics program.
From what I understand, gymnastics is a gentleman's game. I don't know what the equivalent to gentleman's is, but like, you're not supposed to like cheer and go nuts and make noise while other teams are like on the balance beam and stuff. Bobby told me that when he was covering it, that when Georgia came, like some fans were kind of doing that, and they actually like the gymnasts and like the coaches like hushed the crowd because that's not how gymnastics goes down etiquette wise, I guess. So I mean, it has to make a difference though. You're playing in the gym that you feel comfortable with and stuff, but I guess it's not something where your fans are trying to break the other team's concentration.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're about done. We'll be back on Friday/Saturday with a recap of the last day of SEC Media Days. Also, a quick shout out to our newest frequent emailer, Chicago Gator. And by frequent emailer, I mean that's one or two emails in total. But Chicago Gator has joined Vince. If you would like to join the exclusive club along with Vince and Chicago Gator.
The Champions Club?
The Champions Club, if you will. Email your feedback to sports@alligator.org. All right, fellas. Peace.